As most of you know quite well, we have an emphasis on mindfulness practice through insight. That insight comes from our mindfulness. We practice mindfulness, and we create the conditions for insight may arise. One cannot practice insight. One can't say, oh, I'm going to go out and do a little bit of insight practicing for the next 20 minutes. That's one way of approaching practice, is the cultivation of the conditions for insight. Another way is to approach the practice from the point of view of developing a deeper and deeper concentrated mind, a collected, unified mind that leads to absorption and going through the absorptions. That's another way to practice. Those who do that are utilizing that for their, ultimately for insight. And then a third way that we practice is through the cultivation of the heart qualities, so termed Brahma Viharas, the heavenly abodes, the abodes where the Brahmas live, where it's this abode, this, the mind states that are heavenly, they're without conflict. And there are four of these, metta, this loving kindness, a kind of friendliness towards all. That's quite powerful, and it's the most commonly used. And then next is karuna, this compassion, so that the mind, when it runs into suffering, responds with compassion. And the Buddha termed this the heart's quiver. It's a response of the heart to suffering, whereas metta is the unconditional heart's flowing. It's just a radiating outwards. It's not conditioned on conditions. And then sympathetic joy, which is not empathetic, but rather sympathetic joy. And this is a kind of happiness for the happiness of others that in its mature form does not require any connection on your behalf to that person. You are literally made happy by their happiness without any skin in the game, as it were. And again, that's a pretty mature form of the practice. And then last is upekkha, this equanimity that was referred to in the small group or sometime this morning or last night. And that's a kind of an equanimity of the mind. The mind is balanced. Balance does not mean calm. There's the full-blossomed equanimity would have a lot of calm in it, but it's not the same. Equanimity is the ability to not be disturbed by disturbances. So the mind can have a disturbance arise, but then one doesn't take birth in that disturbance, and so it just rolls on through. And again, there's these are all mature as characteristics, and our access to them more accurately. So we're going to be doing the metta practice now, and we're going to be watching metta as movement. This is where we are inclining the mind in a certain direction. And so we are deliberately inviting the movement of the mind towards this capacity of mind, heart. And so we're interested in this felt sense of, oh yes, there is a kind of a inclining, there's a kind of moving in it in this direction creates the conditions which are favorable for metta to arise, without thinking I am creating the metta. It's not that exactly. It's more just you create the conditions through movement of attention towards. And we're practicing, we're not resulting. This entire tradition is practice-based. It's not resulting-based. We can't go out and practice results. the less attached to the outcome, as we heard in that quote, do not think of the fruit. That is what creates the condition where most likely the fruit of our efforts will fructify in the lives of another. So the mind becomes very still in any of the Brahmavihara practices because they have a concentration aspect and they're often used to achieve samadhi states. Words, movement of the felt sense. So think of someone in your life that it's very easy to have good wishes for, that just kindness towards, just, oh, I hope they get whatever they need. It's so easy because they're just, you have that feeling already towards them that this has already blossomed in you. It can be a person that you know well or a person you don't know very well, but not someone that you have mixed feelings about, someone that it's pretty pure. So for an example of that can be your pet. That could be a dog or a cat. That's most easy for you to have. Or you could have a grandchild or a child that's really young and you just wish that child the best. And or you're a school teacher and you think of one of the kids in your school or somebody's kid down the street or just someone that's real to you, that it's palpable so that you have a physical felt sense response. If it's available, create a picture in the mind of this person. It may not be like a photograph. It might be the sounds they make, or just their smile, or just the way they talk, or could be anything, but something that you go, that's them, and it brings a smile. Drop this image into the heart from the mind. So drop it from, let's imagine you've created it in your head. Somewhere it was there in the head. Maybe not. Maybe it was always in the heart for you. But drop it into the area of the physical heart or the spirit of the physical heart. And now smile at that image. Metta feels good. Knowing full well that sometimes we start out with the total idea of offering metta, this friendliness, this loving kindness, and what shows up is irritation at that person, or that person's got enough already. Time for others to get a little more. So that's not unusual. But we start with this kind of person where hopefully you've screened out quite a bit of that. But again, that can always come up about, but what about me? And we start to use these phrases. Again, we don't have to. If we get a chance to do a second one, we won't use phrases. We'll use radiating metta. But let's start with the phrases because we're used to those, many of us. The first phrase has to do with safety, feeling safe. And from my view, starting with safety is because it allows us to start to drop in the person in their life, or us in saying this, we drop into safety. And the second has to do, it's typically a phrase about happiness. That's the word that's used, the mind's happy. And then the third is one of health. And then the fourth is one of our nearly like joy and ease. May you live up. And you're always encouraged to create your own practice. So with this person that you've created, you're directing this well-wishing towards them. You're letting their experience draw, pull the metta, an openness to allowing the flow. because you have a spontaneous feeling towards this. And again, this is all practical. This is not something to imagine and say the phrase silently to your, may you be safe from internal and external harm. May you be safe from internal and external ourselves. We're inviting the feeling to come forward. You are inclining the heart with your steadiness. May you have a calm, clear mind and a peaceful, loving heart. May you have a calm, clear mind and a peaceful, loving heart. May you have a calm, clear mind and a peaceful, loving heart. This, when I taught in the prison, this was the phrase that they could accept for happiness. Letting that phrase go, and now, may you be physically strong, healthy, and vital. May you be physically strong, healthy, and vital. May you experience love, joy, wonder, and wisdom in this life, just as it is the feeling. Let loose of the phrase or that person and notice, is there more stillness, less stillness? You have this friendliness, this well-wishing, this deep acceptance, this caring towards oneself. One is moving it, one is directing it as wise attention towards oneself. So there's a movement towards, and then the challenge equally is opening to receiving it from ourselves, opening to receive it from another. It can all be complicated. The Buddha said you could look everywhere and find nobody more worthy of happiness than your own, which can be very charged in our world. May I be safe from internal and external heart. Movement of well-wishing towards oneself. May I be physically strong, healthy, and vital. May I experience love, joy. Where you're staying with the body can affect what comes forth, and we move it deliberately. We're moving it energetically, inviting that energetic feeling to manifest. Mind is part of right effort, again, towards that which is wholesome and that which away from that which is unwholesome, without aversion to the unwholesomeness, because then that's judging it. We recognize its unskillfulness, but the judging is something extra. So discernment in this kind of Buddhist perspective, discernment is different than the judging. We don't create a person that's good or bad, or we don't create ourselves as good or bad, or better than, worse than. The Buddha was very strong, and he would say neither better than, worse than, or the same as. He was very much saying stay out of that neighborhood. So, but we're learning to incline the mind, and we're learning to incline it when we're in between feather and yon shore, because the mind is more pliable when it's not engaged in anything else. So we're cultivating these traits now so that we're going to live them in life. So you've got a difficult person at work, you can incline the mind towards a softer receptivity of that difficult person. A number of times over the years, people have said, what do I do about the difficult person at work? And at first I would say, well, have compassion for them because you only have to interact with them occasionally. They got to live with themselves 24/7. But then I started saying, well, do metta for them. And in a surprising number of times, people have come back and said, well, I did the metta because they were desperate. I did the metta, and now I'm like their new best friend. And I never wanted to be their new best friend. I just wanted them to leave me alone. So what do I do now? And I say, good luck. I think we have an announcement.
I wanted to say a couple words about Donna. and do it now and not at the end of the day when we're all already in our cars and doing, you know, planning the evening. But we've been talking a lot this morning and practicing with relationship of stillness and movement of mind and body. And I think dana, or generosity, is a process that Philip talked about. You know, what matter lives? And then the second part of the relationship is the gratitude that we feel for having received what's so important.
This seems to be the Ajahn Chah weekend. And this is Ajahn Amaro's book. And he says that Ajahn Chah would ask, "Have you ever seen still water?" And then monastics would nod, "Yes, of course we've seen still water before." And he goes on and says, at the same time, they were probably saying inwardly, "Now that's a pretty strange question." But outwardly, everyone was very respectful to Ajahn Chah, as he was one of Thailand's great meditation masters. Then he would ask, "Well then, have you ever seen flowing water?" And that also seemed a strange thing to ask. They had to respond, "Yes, we've seen flowing water." "So did you ever see still flowing water?" "Have you ever seen still flowing water?" In Thai, you would phrase that as nam lai ning. Have you ever seen nam lai ning? No, that we've never seen. He loved to get that bewildering effect. Ajahn Chah would then explain that the mind's nature is still, yet it's flowing. It's flowing, yet it's still. He would use the word chitta for the knowing mind, the mind of awareness. The chitta itself is totally still. It has no movement. It is not related to all that arises and ceases. It is silent and spacious. Mind, objects, sights, sounds, smells, taste, touch, thoughts, and emotions flow through it. Problems arise because the clarity of the mind gets entangled with sense impressions. The untrained heart chases the delightful, runs away from the painful, and as a result finds itself struggling, alienated, and miserable. By contemplating our own experience, we can make clear a distinction between the mind that knows, chitta, and the sense impressions that flow through it. That would be, for those of you who are scholarly, that would be the vijnana moments, part of the five aggregates that are flowing. A moment of consciousness arises and ceases. And but this chitta is not arising and ceasing in that way. By refusing to get entangled with any sense impressions, any mind moments of sense impressions that are moving through, we find refuge in the quality of stillness, silence, and spaciousness, which is the mind's own nature. This policy of non-interference allows everything and is disturbed by nothing. So this importance of stillness and still flowing. I spoke last night about the unity. This is the unifying the opposites. Stillness and movement are opposites. And I said last night that C.G. Jung said that the second half of life, the purpose of the second half of life was to be able to reconcile the opposites, life and death. We're here and we won't be. That's one of the big ones. People, kindness and cruelty. That's another big one. And so Jung said that the way we did this was through paradoxical thinking. We couldn't do it rationally. And I think that was a wise point to make, that we hold these opposites, stillness and movement, as a whole. We don't hold them. Their connection is through their difference, but they are connected, and they don't make any sense one without the other. If there was no cruelty in life, then kindness wouldn't be identified, because it's just there. It'd be like the fish in the water. Since they only know water, why would they notice water? It's all they know. It's just taken for granted. In the same way with the needing of the opposites. This is, can seem like a small point or too subtle or something, but boy, in your life, you're all the time running into the opposites. You're making all of these decisions. You've got these mixed feelings about people. There's this gain and this loss and making a decision at work. If you're choosing a research project, you've got to choose one thing you're going to isolate and let loose of others. And there's this, it's forever this play of the opposites. And the opposites are part of the moving world. They're part of the moving world. So the liberated mind would be beyond the kindness that we would mean. Because the kindness we ordinarily know is the kindness that's coming in relation to that we have the capacity for cruelness in us. It's beyond that. It's gate parsham, gate bodhisvaha, gone beyond, far beyond. Ah, it's that kind of a feeling. So as we are learning metta in the context of aversion, but the ultimate feeling of the metta is beyond the metta that's the loving kindness that's part of aversion. It's we the ultimate liberated mind is off the scale of the opposites. That's hard to believe. But my own little experiences here and there, and what I've witnessed in a few people, and the Buddha at one point says, this is this book, The Island, which is an excellent book that Ajahn Amaro and Ajahn Pasano did. There is an island which you cannot go beyond. It is a place of nothingness, a place of non-possession, of non-attachment. It is the total end of death and decay. And this is why it's called not much about this topic. The reconciliation of the opposites is something that every human being has to do. It's an existential dilemma. And again, if you go, I don't think that way. You think about life and death all the time, and you think about liking and not liking people. You have ambivalence towards people. You have all of these kinds of things that you just aren't recognizing, maybe, the degree to which opposites exist in your world. And you can be what's happening in our country. There's so much of the opposites right now, and it's so painful. 2 years ago when I was here, it was all so painful that that's what we did our groups around. It was just this, that really the opposites here in that way. So, and the stillness is a gateway for reconciling the opposites. Right, accepting the opposites are there and feeling in this spaciousness that they're just both arising and passing away. And they don't have permanency. The permanency undermines us. So this invitation once again to see the movement, and that which is moving has no lasting ground. It is always passing. It's always anicca. And we have to deal with it, but we deal with it as something that's passing and not as a me or mine or that has permanence in that way. So we're going to do another walking practice now. And in this walking practice, written out here for this purpose, and we just got to find them. We're going to be seeing as we're walking, are we leaning forward in the walk? Does our mind lead us, or are we holding back a little in the walk? Or are we just here in this moment? So we're seeing how we are relating to the movement. So do we lean into movement? Which that book by Sandberg aside, leaning into the moment is not a good idea from a martial arts point of view, and because when you're leaning into something, you're dependent on it for support, and that's a very unstable position. And also, if you need to go in another direction, you've got to get back to neutral before you can respond in another direction. So far better to stay in neutral about things, to stay grounded in here and now, rather than being a little bit into the future moment. And then likewise, not really being willing to come into this moment, which often we will do during our day. We're not really just here moving into the moments of our day. Like then I'm going back to the difficult person again. We kind of are back here as we go towards that difficult person. And again, not the way of balance, not the way of smoothness. So we're interested in this. I watched myself on one retreat around this, and this all has to do with intention as well. When I would walk down the hall to my room, at what point would the movie run in my head that I was turning the doorknob to go into the room? And I was so amazed that, let's say it was 20 feet, I don't really know right now, but say it was 20 feet to the door from when I turned the corner. About 10 feet in, about halfway, whatever the number of feet, halfway in, I would already be turning the doorknob. I was rehearsing in some way. And if I watched closely, I was already on the doorknob. And I was doing some sort of rote thing, or I was just leaning into it. So I said, well, I'm going to stop doing that. I'm going to have an arising in the moment when it's appropriate. And so I would try to stop myself, you know, from that happening. I would divert attention onto all these things. And finally I said, no, what I will do, I'll just, whatever happens before I get in front of the door, I will stop, I will be in stillness, and I will wait till I have a genuine moment of that is a true intention on my part, not some Pavlovian, you know, created response, you know, way ahead of time where I'm just conditioned. There's a doorknob I'm going to be opening. And I will feel that, yes, I really intend right this moment. I'm feeling it in my body this moment that I want to open this door, that I'm feeling it as a felt sense, not as a theory. I knew theoretically, of course, I want in the room, so I've got to open the door. And this may be too subtle. I hope not, because it was really a useful exercise. And so what I would do is I would stand there till I could feel it. And sometimes it was so hard to get just in this moment, to not be leaning, that I would get uncomfortable because people were walking by and they were going to be thinking, what's with him standing in front of that door? And so, and I would just literally just write it off and go inside. So I got better at it. And then I started practicing this in other aspects of life. When am I really in the moment versus way ahead of time? Now, you may be a person who's way behind, you know, like you're in the door and you're kind of stumbling for the doorknob because you haven't really arrived in front of the door yet. That's just another version of like I am, but the opposite of it. And in some aspects of your life, you may lean in, and some aspects of your life, you may pull away. That happens also. And a more regular movement class, we can't do that in here, but I will have people hands on a chest and people are moving and all for you to feel that you can actually energetically feel what you're doing about whether or not you're in the presence or not. But this isn't that kind of thing. So as we do the walking practice, you're in movement. What is your relationship to movement? Are you kind of already leaning into the next step? Are you sort of not really into this step? You've never quite, you're always a little bit behind or sometimes behind. What does it feel like? And again, I'm asking you to stop in stillness about halfway on your walking practice. So you just stop for, and then you start again. Again, you're catching up with yourself. You're remembering, you're recollecting yourself. in that those pause moments so that you can have a felt sense of what's in the moment. Now, some of you are going to realize, oh, I'm going to go outside, so there's a door, and when do I choose to push the door? This is not the time to practice that. There are other people who need to get out that door. And same if you're going to the bathroom. Others need bio breaks too, so we don't stand in front of the bathroom door. So this is the practice. Your question? No, because here, and at the end of the step, when you go and, you know, take your 10 steps and you stop, that's function-based. That's part of a motivation to, because you're completing and you're in, the walking has a level of doing in it. And so at this point, to continue doing, you're required to turn, to stop and then turn. This one is purely just for investigation. It's the same, but it's more refined. You're pausing. You can use those at the end in just this way, but our mind tends to be like, I invented this because I didn't get the experience reported back to me I was looking for at the end of the walks. I'm being transparent here. So, but in the middle, you just stop, and you're stopping for no reason other than to catch up with yourself. The more you do that, the more you will do that at the end of the of your steps too. But again, you can go into rote. You see, oh, here I am. Okay, I'm turning. I feel that and all this, but you're in rote. But here, there's a deliberateness to this stillness, and there's a beat to it. There's this, you know, you're staying. There's a real sense of it in terms of this, though, I am really catching up with myself. That's all I'm doing. I don't have any function in relation to what the movement's purpose is. This is me coming back to me, coming back to the stillness. Thank you for that question. I wish I'd said that on my own. Okay, then let us do this. Again, we're going to have a group. And the group is, if you weren't there this morning, if you're there this morning, I told four people to come back. The people who there wasn't room for this morning, when you're not going to be here tomorrow, you come back. But otherwise, it's people A to G. Who knows if this is going to turn out right in numbers and all this, but A to G for your last name. And again, we'll be upstairs for that. And we'll have 25 minutes for a walk-in, so we'll basically come back at 30 minutes. We'll come back at 3 o'clock.